Welcome to Rochester Speaks. This morning we're speaking with Jennifer Farringer of the NCADD Rochester area. Good morning.
Good morning, Tony. Great to be here.
So today we have a very serious subject we're talking about, and I'm sure you deal with this every single day. And you wanted to concentrate on fecal alcohol spectrum disorders, correct?
Correct. And it's very timely because this month is FASD Awareness Month. Particularly today is International FASD Awareness Day. Okay. So it's very timely.
And that's, you know, in simple terms, it's basically like your commercial says, you're never drinking alone if you're pregnant. Moms who have anything to drink while pregnant, it's just not something you should be doing.
Exactly.
And I can't believe that in 2021, people still have to be told that. That is mind-boggling to me, Jennifer.
It is. And part of it's the stigma around alcohol. And it's a legal drug, right? Everybody consumes. So the issue here is, I mean, our clear message, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, and particularly as soon as you know you're pregnant, please, for the safety of your child, stop drinking.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, I'm in my 60s, and I'm sure that back in the dark ages, you know, my mother was never a smoker, but I know she had a cigarette or two, and I'm sure she had a drink or two. When did we discover this, and when did we get into, you know, just plugging this, that we shouldn't have anything? How long have we been getting this message across?
So in your and my framework of time, it's relatively recent. It's in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively new. But when you think about it, 2021, the diagnosis has been around for a long time, right? Since the 70s, it was discovered and given a diagnosis and accepted in the medical community as a diagnosis. The issue is, however, that not all physicians, pediatricians are on the lookout for this.
What are some of the, I mean, how would they know? How would they know? You know, because you're not going to come to the office drunk, right?
Yeah. So typically the best thing you can do, OBGYN visits from the beginning to have a conversation with your patient, or women when you're pregnant, having a conversation with your OBGYN around the dangers of drinking during pregnancy. And how do you know? Typically, you know when your child doesn't meet the expected developmental milestones. So typically, you're bringing your child to the pediatrician. They're expected to reach X amount of pounds, X amount of height, certain developmental things, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's your first clue.
Okay.
And then if mom were honest about her drinking, that might be the second clue. Third clue, although it doesn't impact all kids, there is a distinctive set of facial features. But that only impacts about 10% of kids. So that can't be your only marker.
Yeah. It's funny. Years ago, going back almost 30 years, I did someone I knew had adopted a baby who they had suspected that the child was, given birth from a mom who had been drinking. And he had some issues, obviously. He had some issues, and that's what, but is there any way to, I don't know if 30 years ago they knew if there's any way to nail that down, knowing that that was the absolute case, or is there any way to know that that's definitely it?
Not without going through a diagnosis, and here is part of the issue. In New York State, we really have one diagnostic clinic, and we're fortunate that it's here.
Wow, in the whole state, there's one here?
Yes.
You think in New York City they would have some too, or no?
There is a doc in New York City that also does diagnosis. There's just not the level of diagnostic clinic capacity. And even here, you know, the number of women that are able to be seen, and it's part of URMC, Golisano Pediatrics. So even with the one clinic we have here, the number of women they're able to see doesn't meet the capacity, the potential or expected capacity of the state. And women talk about traveling 4, 5, 6 hours to get here for that diagnosis.
Is there anything that can be done about that? I mean, is there any way to have more clinics?
Good question. So what we're doing now nationwide, so NCADD is part of a national organization, NOFAS, the National Organization on Fetal Alcohol spectrum disorder. And NOFAS is in the process of advocating for the Respect Act. One of the things that the Respect Act is hoping for is an expansion of diagnostic clinics. So we have been collectively reaching out to all our New York State representatives on a federal level to make them aware of the capacity issue and the need for prevention, treatment, research in this area. It's pretty abysmal.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And especially when you look at prevalence, right? You know, the prevalence of FASD, as many as 1 in 20 in the United States. It's 2.5 times more than autism.
Yeah.
And autism, we know so much more about,
yeah,
and we're more quick to recognize. And I think part of that's around the stigma that surrounds alcoholism. That's part of the reason.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Explain what this means. It says over 90% of individuals with FASD will develop comorbid mental health conditions. What is comorbid mental health?
Condition? So your best bet for a mom who has a child, and typically you're right, you identified early on, many of these kids are adopted or foster kids, mm-hmm, is to get an early diagnosis and get early services in place. Because if not, then you risk having secondary issues. So by secondary comorbid mental health issues, it's kind of a given. There's, mm-hmm, going to be other problems arise, and they can be many. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about it, there's going to be poor social skills. There's,
yeah,
going to be possibility of not being able to connect, for example, with any meaningful employment, housing, potential criminal activity. And in this, we're kind of sort of getting ahead of ourselves, but part of the issue around FASD is not only the potential of physical issues, but cognitive issues. And what that means is really the executive brain, the, mm-hmm, judgment part of the brain, mm-hmm, doesn't work very well. You know, so boundary issues are not very solid with a child affected by FASD.
And is that a lifelong thing?
It's a lifelong issue. Yeah. So the best you can do for your child is to get an early diagnosis, early intervention, and through URMC, the same program. And by the way, connections to all those resources are on our website. But early intervention with your child, early support services to give them the best opportunity for success that you can.
I'm guessing it has to be extremely expensive to raise a child that has the syndrome. Okay. I mean, it's got to be, if for nothing else, you don't want to drink because it's going to cost you more in the long run.
And when we talk about the cost of healthcare, particularly, you know, speaking for New York State, the estimate is over $12 billion, and that's in combined for FASD, and that's combined healthcare costs, special education costs, residential care costs, productivity loss, and criminal justice or corrections costs. So when you put that all together, that's a big ticket item when we're looking at escalating healthcare costs anyway.
What are some of the ways you would, I don't know how to ask the question, but do you get in touch with people? Or do they get in touch with you? I mean, how does it happen that they come to use your services?
Yeah, so typically a mom will, so we have a nice collaboration between us as the prevention education provider and URMC as the diagnostician group and the intervention group. So we refer back and forth. Mm-hmm. They either come to one or the other, and we refer back to, so that when they're Googling, very much, mm-hmm, we come up. So they call us for information. We connect them with the FASD parent support group that we host monthly. We connect them back with URMC and strongly encourage them to get a diagnosis as soon as possible for their own sanity.
Yeah.
Because it gives that parent the tools that, you know, it's not about bad parenting. I'm not doing something wrong. My child has a disability, mm-hmm, and identifying what that is and what the limitations are as early as possible will help both the child and the parent to for greater success.
Is it difficult for, and I'm going to guess it's probably the mom that would be getting in touch with your organization. Is it difficult for them? Because, all right, if they feel that, I mean, if they're drinking and they're pregnant, they know they're, did they know they're doing something wrong? I guess that's the question. I mean, I've known that for years, but you would think that's just common knowledge, right?
Yeah. So that's a kind of a twofold question. So more often than not, it's rarely that a mom who is still drinking with an FASD child will call us. And why? Because typically, if a mom hasn't managed her own drinking, it's almost impossible. I mean, it's really difficult to manage the issues around a child with FASD. So much more frequently, we get a call from the mom or the family member that they have adopted a child with FASD, okay, or they have fostered a child with FASD. But if a mom who is drinking, say, you know, part of the problem too is you might not even know that you're pregnant within the first four, six weeks, right? And it's not to, if a mom were to call then, I'd encourage them to get treatment ASAP, and they would be given priority admission as a pregnant woman. Mm-hmm. So I would really, really encourage that, and certainly not give them the message, damage is done, forget about
it.
No, as soon as you reach out and get some help, the more likely that your child will be, have minimal impact, if any, if you can respond to this quickly.
Okay. Now, does your organization deal with children who are, you know, born and living with this at all, or is that another whole story?
So that's difficult too, Tony. With URMC, they have a project that's like an intervention project, early intervention project. So Christy Petrinko, the researcher at the URMC facility, that, again, the link is on our website, she's developed several early intervention projects with kids at various stages, working with them on role-playing skills. There's also several other things available mm-hmm. through them, through some of the disability organizations, but they need, again, to have that diagnosis as soon as possible, right, and they need to get DDS approval for support for those supports.
All right. Your organization, as far as fundraising, do you have anything from, you know, the government money coming in or is it all private donations?
So we are funded through the feds, through the state, through the county us.
Okay.
For FASD, the funding is
zero.
This.
Oh, geez.
So
what do you do about that? Do you have fundraisers?
We do. We have an annual luncheon that we haven't been able to have now since 2000.
It gets better, friends.
I'm hoping that we'll be able to have that again in 2022. But that doesn't stop us. We do get micro grants, and I'm talking about micro.
Yeah.
To be able to do what we're doing right now, Tony, be able to have the conversation, place ads on radio stations, mm-hmm. in some of the print media. It's because our job is to educate and make the community aware.
Right.
Look, you know, please consider if you're pregnant, don't drink. Clear message.
So let's give the bullet points. The clear message is if you're pregnant, don't drink. No level of drinking is acceptable. Correct.
Exactly. To be absolutely safe.
Sure. Right.
Yeah.
And what, any other quick little bullet points you can?
Yeah. I think the biggest here is, out of all the developmental disabilities or physical disabilities, FASD is the one that's 100% preventable.
Preventable. Yeah.
That's huge. That's huge.
And if people need to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
So they can reach out to me directly at 719-3480. That's a 585 area code, 719-3480. But I'd really recommend checking our website out at www.ncadd-ra.org. And you'll find a whole page of information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and all the resources that we've been talking about.
All right. Well, Jennifer Farage, thank you so much. And have you been successful? Do you feel you're making a difference?
I hope we're getting really close with this RESPECT Act. So that'll make a big difference if we can get some more real funding devoted to FASD research, prevention, intervention. And so we're getting baby steps closer.
Baby steps, okay.
Yeah. And honestly, whenever you can connect a woman to services, that's a success story, one by one by one.
All right, Jennifer, thank you so much.